Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Mann.
Brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union, New England Fat Loss, and Jordan's Furniture.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Think you'll be able to play first at all again this season, or is that shoulder banged up where you think you're just going to be the DH?
I mean, when I play first, you know, it can bother my hitting a little bit, you know. But at the play, I play, you know. But I'm here to produce on the home plate, you know. And I explained that to everybody here, you know. But if I got to play first, I play first. I've done it before, you know. I did it in Philly, you know. That's what, you know, they asked me to play first, I play first. So, you know, let's see.
Here we go. Hanley Ramirez last night with Dan Roach over at Fenway Park. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. We've spent a lot of time the Celtics this week with good reason. Okay, with good reason. And we just had agenda-free Friday here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. But for the next hour, all baseball. All Red Sox, all baseball up until 7 o'clock. We'll take it right into 4th of July weekend. And so if you're in the car somewhere heading north, heading south, maybe you're going up to New Hampshire, maybe you're going to Maine, maybe you're going to the Cape, wherever you're going, you got a little time to kill, you call us here. Sean McAdam is alongside tonight. We do a full hour on the Red Sox. One more time, 617-779-0985. Marshall Hook here also to give us headlines. And we remind you that the Baseball Reporters is brought to you by Hot Summer Fun at Mohegan Sun, Connecticut, now through September 3rd. Thanks to our friends at Mohegan Sun. So here's where we're going to start with the Red Sox tonight. First of all, let me. Sean is alongside, and let me just tell you, Sean, the last couple of nights I threw this out there because I think the Red Sox play game 80 tonight.
That's true. They are up. Yeah, they've played last night was 79, so they tomorrow will be exactly the halfway point.
Okay, so I brought this up a couple of nights ago because obviously we were going to be away for the long weekend, and so this question sort of serves as a backdrop and has served as a backdrop to the show for the last few nights, which is given where the Red Sox are now. And they are back in first place in the American League East. Do you look at them as, and I say this to the listeners as well as to you, Sean, do you look at them as being about what you expected, a little less or a little more? Before you answer the question, let me say that one of the things I find interesting about the American League this year, because to me the Red Sox are a little less than where they should be. They were on a 90-win pace going into last night. I thought they'd be a little bit better than that. And frankly, when I look at the American League, I think they should be better at that. Do you realize that as the second-best team in the American League based on one-loss record, the Red Sox are as close to the bottom of the league as they are to the top, which is odd when you really think of it. They have the second-best record in the league. They are 9.5 behind Houston. They are also 9.5 of the Chicago White Sox, who have the worst record in the league. And what that tells me is what it tells a lot of people, that other than Houston, the rest of the American League is sort of one big pile. The Red Sox right now are at the top of it. And not to think negatively, but you know how
which
it works.
Which would be unlike you.
You know, no, it would be unlike me. But the you know, if you slip up for a week, if you have one bad week, you're out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say conversely, but the other thing is if you go on a run, which they did starting about a month ago when they went, you know, whatever it was, 8-2 for 10 games and started to pull away, or not pull away, but at least get themselves back into the top of the division. I agree with you, Tony. I thought they would be better. I had them for like somewhere 95, 96 wins. I thought they would win the division. Last time I was here, I said I still think they're the best team in that division. I think that's still true, but I also think there's more there, or at least there should be. I thought Joel Sherman had a good summation of things about a week ago. He said it's entirely possible that we've seen the best of the Yankees already and we haven't yet seen the best of the Red Sox. And I think that's probably accurate, which doesn't guarantee that we're going to see that best, but there's more room for the Red Sox to get better than there is for the Yankees, I think, long term.
Okay, let's just focus on the last part of that, which is we haven't seen the best of the Red Sox. True, right? True. That's exactly my point. We've played half a season and we haven't seen what they're capable of yet. Mm-hmm. Not fully. I expected more. I thought they could give more. I think they are capable of more.
So do I.
And so by contrast, I just want to give you the standings in the National League. Okay, there are four teams in the National League right now that basically look like they have a pretty good grasp on a playoff spot.
Yeah, it's three teams in one division over 600, okay, and the Nationals only dropped under recently.
Okay, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Nationals are all, it looks like, head and shoulders above pretty much everyone else. The Rockies, although, are only a game behind the Nationals. But the Rockies are there having lost eight in a row. If the Red Sox lose eight in a row, are they still going to be where the Rockies are now?
No, but they won't play themselves out either because the division's so mediocre.
Okay, but this is my point this is my point about the league, right? It's my point about the league that the Red Sox can lose eight in a row and fall a fair amount. Colorado loses eight in a row and still has a cushion because they were so far ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I think where we are, because there are no teams in the American League who are dedicated to tanking the way there is in the National League. So left unsaid about your three teams over 600 or thereabouts is that look at the bottom. Look at how bad the Phillies are, right?
Sure, yeah,
look how bad the Padres are.
Absolutely.
Look how unexpectedly bad the Giants are.
Yes.
There's three teams, I think, under 400 in the National League, which gives you that disparity where you've got three teams, or more at 600 or so, and three teams below 400, whereas the American League, other than Houston, and even they've come back to the pack a little bit, as might be expected with the injuries to Keuchel and McCullers and some of their starters, they are not playing at the pace they were even a month ago, but they're clearly the class of the American League. And I thought
Cleveland hasn't played as well as it should either.
No, I thought Cleveland was the best team in the league, in the American League. The Red Sox were second, and Houston was third. But it's turned out that Houston is separated from the other two, and both Cleveland and the Red Sox are in their 8 or 9 games over 500 mold.
And so to me, Sean, the ultimate point is this. Okay, the Red Sox are in good shape. It's not like they're in bad shape. They're in good shape. They're in pretty good shape. But they haven't played great yet. They still haven't played great yet.
True.
And now, look, you can look at that two ways. You can say, well, why not? What are the elements or what are the things preventing them from playing well? Or you could say, well, look at they haven't played all that great and they're still in first place. They have the second best record in the league. Wait until they get hot. So you can look at that two ways. I want to get to Hanley, too, which we will do when we come back, because his interview with Dan Roach last night was interesting, entertaining. I also think Hanley is being a little disingenuous, particularly with the comment we just played. And I'll explain why when we come back.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Next perception, people would say, he doesn't care. From the sense of DH, you're happy just DH and don't want to get out there and play first.
No, it's not that. I can't throw. What about if I got to make a double play, I can turn the double play. So it's little things that I don't like to throw it out there because it's mine. It's staying inside the clubhouse, between me and the manager and the coaches and, trainers, and then it's when the people from the radio start, creating things that are it's not right, You don't do that. You gotta ask and find out what's going on before you say things like that, because that can affect the young guys, the team.
See that, Marshall Hook? It's all your fault. It's the radio guys making stuff up. Marshall.
Yeah, it is.
Sean.
Always been a huge fan of
him. Can't blame me this year.
McAdam, flapping his gums all the time about people.
I'm nothing but complimentary when it comes to Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah,
I love
exactly. We do have a couple open lines, 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls here in an instant, but I do want to also follow up with Sean on Hanley Ramirez. And as I said, the big picture backdrop, how do you feel about the Red Sox halfway through the season? Game 81 tomorrow night. Tonight's game 80. Tomorrow's game 81. Canada Day in Toronto.
Last time I was in Toronto for Canada Day, I got a selfie with Don Cherry. That was a highlight.
That must have been a moment for you.
It was. It's cool. Yeah. He had the maple leaf flag on in his sport coat and everything. But it was cool.
You must have had a little coho in your shorts.
Take it easy.
Yeah, I bet you that was the reaction from you. So with regard to Hanley in first base.
But it was like the most Canadian thing ever. On Canada Day in Toronto, getting a selfie with Don Cherry.
Special.
Yeah.
Special.
It was the ultimate Canadian experience.
So Hanley,
if I had some poutine to eat with it, then it would have been perfect.
Hanley says that he can't play first base because he can't throw. And then in the earlier cut with Rochy, he said, well, if I play first base, you know, it affects my shoulders. I can't hit. Why are you grinning?
Kinda
Why
like,
are you smirking?
Kind of like Manny, where they had to x-ray both knees.
Yeah, exactly, because they didn't know which one.
Right.
So are you suggesting that Hanley's making this up and that he just doesn't want to play the field?
Look, it's pretty clear that Hanley would prefer to DH. How much the shoulder is actually an impediment to playing first base, I don't know. I think that something has to explain the drop-off that we've seen from a year ago. This guy had a good year last year. And obviously benefited from being in a lineup with David Ortiz, and that changes how teams pitch to him, and it was a more productive offense from top to bottom. But there's a big drop-off this year, and given that there is a career-long history of shoulder issues, I think there is something to it, whether it's preventing him from playing first base, reducing his effectiveness as a hitter if he plays first base. That much is unclear, but I think it's a factor.
Okay, so here's the good news. That last year, 22 of his home runs came in the second half. Okay, 22 home runs came after the All-Star break. So Hanley didn't really start to mash until after the All-Star
Although
break.
He was hitting far better, just not for as much power in
better
the first
average,
half.
Right, that's right. Exactly right. He had a better average, but he didn't mash until the second half. So there was still hope for Hanley, but this idea that the playing first affects him, please. To me, that's nonsense. And honestly, Sean, at the end of the day, I really don't care. All I want is him to hit.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why they're paying him.
Okay, but if he doesn't hit, then forget it. Put him on the DL and play someone else. Because if he's telling me that his shoulders are bothering him and he doesn't hit, well, then you're no good to me. I don't care if your shoulders are hurt or not. You have to hit either way. That's how I feel about Hanley, and I suspect that the Red Sox feel the same way. The Red Sox also had a couple of other roster, I want to say decisions or issues that they addressed before tonight's game with the Blue Jays up in Toronto. We'll get to those here momentarily. One of them may come up in this call. Rick's in his car. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You mentioned the other day that Bogaerts, you'd like to see him hit for a little more power, but my question to you is, would you be willing to sacrifice, say, 30, 40 points on his average to see him hit 15 more bombs a year?
So, look, ultimately, here's what I'll say. Well, Sean, you go ahead. Go
well,
first.
I was going to say, look at the numbers. Also, Bogaerts finished with 20-something homers last
21,
year.
21, yeah, 21.
Right, and I think he had about the same number in the first half last year. Same deal as Hanley. The power started to come in the second half. I'm going to check the numbers, but I remember that being the case, that he was in the low single digits in home runs as we got into July last year. So maybe, you know, he had the 2-home run game not long ago. Maybe, again, that's coming on now.
Okay, so double check it. I thought he had 9 at the break last year. This year, right now, he's got 5, and he had 3 of them in a 3 or 4 day span. You know, 2 of them in the game at Houston. Look, my short answer on Bogaerts is this. Bogaerts should be able to hit around 290 with 20 homers. Okay, he did that last year, but the drop-off was too dramatic. He batted 235, I think, in the final 2 months of the season. The final 65 games or so, he hit 235. Bogaerts should never hit 235, ever. Not for that length of time. Did you find it yet?
I'm
okay, don't worry.
In the process.
Well, while you're looking, Ryan's in Newton. Ryan, what do you got?
Maz, I'm scared that Dave Dombrowski is going to trade Chavis or Groom or Devers or someone like that, like one of our decent prospects for Mike Moustakas, and I really don't believe in this team, and I really don't think it's a good idea, but I'm scared that he's going to do it, and this farm system is just going to be an absolute joke.
Okay, so Ryan, I don't want him to trade away a good prospect either for another pitcher, especially another starter, at the deadline, and I don't want them to give up another prospect, period, but why do you include Chavis on the list?
Well, I'm just saying because I think that, well, Dombrowski traded like the whole farm system for Kimbrel, and Chavis is definitely one of the better players. I mean, he's mashing right now. I think his OPS is in the 900s. And that's just the teams are going to look. And if Dombrowski's asking for something that the Red Sox need, they're immediately just going to say, hey, we want your best prospects, because they know that he's going to trade them, because he already has.
Okay, so Ryan, have you looked at Chavis's numbers before this year?
Before this year?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay, let me tell you.
He's also 22 years old at high A for the first time, or at double A for the first time.
He just got bumped up.
Right, about 10 days ago. So, look, if Chavis is the guy that's standing in the way from a deal, do it. I don't put him in anywhere near the same category as I do for Devers or Groom or, you know, maybe
Sam
one
Travis.
Or two. Right, right. To me, if you can put Chavis in a deal to help you get better for the second half, do it. But I think the callers brings up a good point, Tony, because, look, Dombrowski's not going to go halfway here. He was brought here to win another championship. We've seen already in the Kimbrel trade, in the Sale trade, in others that he's
Thornburg.
Made.
Thornburg.
Right. Yeah, that's less so because, you know, you're giving up Travis Shaw, who has had a terrific year, but nobody viewed him as this sort of high-end prospect at the time.
Okay, but
they
what about
included some to go with him.
I was going to say Mauricio Dubon, Sean.
Yes. Yeah, and even he, I don't think, is in that same class. Look, there's no question both players in the Sale trade and at least two of the players in the Kimbrel trade were in that elite prospect class. My point being that just because, and I understand what the caller was saying, I don't believe in this team, and I think a lot of fans are of that same opinion, but he's not going to start half-assing it now. You don't say, well, this isn't the year, I guess we'll just reload. No, you're at $180 million on your payroll. You have made this commitment to try to win short-term and damn the torpedoes when it comes to the minor league system. You think he's going to pull up short at the deadline because the minor league system's getting a little thin? No way.
Okay, do you think the luxury tax is a deterrent?
He says no. He says that he
says he's under no mandate from ownership to stay on.
Right, which I think you would say whether it was said or not. You wouldn't want to be tipping your hand and have other teams thinking, oh, the Red Sox are not going to go bold here because they can't spend another, what do they have, about $8 or $9 million under the cap at this place. And also, why the whole notion of staying under the cap, why are you concerned about going over if you're not going to be players for the likes of Bryce Harper or, you know, that big class that comes up at the end of 18? What are you saving your bullets for?
Yeah, listen, you're preaching to the choir here to me. I think the penalties that come along with this CBA and going over the luxury tax are not nearly as bad as everyone's making them out to be. Just my 2 cents. Okay, I don't think they're nearly as bad as everyone's making them out to be. Now, if you go $40 million, $50 million over the tax, that's a different story. You run the risk of paying a pretty significant penalty. The Red Sox aren't going to that number. They're not going that far. I'm more concerned about the young players. I don't want them giving up all those young players.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they move somebody like Devers or Groom. Those two are, particularly because Devers fills an obvious need that's going to be sitting there at the All-Star break next year when you do whatever you do to get through Sandoval or whatever, and then it's time to make the change. And Groom is clearly the most talented pitching prospect in the system, even though he's only 18 or 19 years old. To me, those two would be off limits, but I think he'll trade anything else that's not nailed down.
Okay, and last night, Groom pitched, I think, 5 innings for Lowell, 5 no-hit innings with 6 strikeouts.
Right.
Is his best outing of the year. He's just now starting there. And, you know, getting back on track after a lat injury early in the season. Just quickly on Michael Chavis, because I feel compelled to talk about it now that the caller brought him up. Chavis was a first-round pick. I think he got to go back to, like, 2012, maybe?
He's been in the system at least 4 years.
Okay, so Chavis's OPSs, career in the minor leagues, starting in 2014, 772, and then 682 in 2015, and in 2016... he was a combined 684. This year, all of a sudden, in A-ball, he jumped up to over 1,000. So here's a guy who had never hit 800 in OPS. His first 3 years in the minor leagues, all of a sudden this year, he skyrockets over 1,000.
What are you saying?
I'm just saying, Marshall, you got any theories for that? Like, how could a guy play 3 years in the minor leagues, never have an OPS over 772, in fact, 2 years be under 700, and then all of a sudden start jacking the ball like nobody's business? How do you explain that?
Gumption. Hard work. Perseverance.
I'm with David Price. I think maybe the ball's jacked. That's what I think.
Good old-fashioned, you know, elbow grease.
Something's jacked, whether it's the ball or not. I don't know what the hell it is. Marshall's got your headlines, and when we come back, We will talk about David Price and his performance last night.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Radio.com. Radio.com. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, the last two have been the best so far, and I think it's pretty natural that you get 6-7 starts under your belt. Arm strength continues to improve, and not just measured in velocity, but it's measured in consistency, and the last two games have been really strong on his part.
Well, you just heard was John Farrell talking about David Price last night. Good outing by Price. 7 innings.
Except for the brain fart.
Yep, failing to cover first, correct. But nonetheless, 7 innings, 3 runs. And I think the big thing with Price, the last two outings combined, 1 walk. No home runs, 1 walk.
Yeah, that's him. I mean, when he's good, when he's on.
Yeah.
The command was always very good when he was at his best. There were times early last year and then again in September, you know, he had that really good run from Memorial Day till about Labor Day last year. It was the 6 weeks at the start of the season and the final four that weren't so good. But when he was on that good run, the velocity was good. The command was good. He wasn't walking people, and he was keeping the ball in the ballpark. And we're starting to see that a little bit the last two times.
So to me, the velocity with him has been good from the beginning, Sean.
Yeah, he was over 95, averaging over 95. I think he was, or maybe close to it, 94.7 or something last night.
Last night he hit 97 on one pitch.
Right.
Right, and so again, but I always think the velocity is deceiving because if you want to throw hard, you can. Those guys can. They can muscle the ball there. To me, it's can you throw hard and spot it, right? And also, is there life at the end of it? All the cliches, but nonetheless, I think there's some truth to it. And in the case of Price, up until last night, his first 5 starts, he gave up a home run in every one. The last two, he hasn't allowed any homers. Now, Marshall was cynical enough to point out that he could have very easily allowed one last night. It was close. Right, Marshall? Good.
Yeah,
say
that
it.
That was a pretty stinging double there in the fourth inning. Yeah.
Nonetheless, it stayed in the ballpark, no home runs, and 1 walk. 12 strikeouts, 1 walk in the last couple of outings. By the way, we do have a couple open lines open if you want to jump in, 617-779-0985. Before we get to the phones, Sean, let me ask you the same question I asked earlier in the day. Hanley, Price, which one do you have more faith in to contribute in the second half?
Price.
Why?
Oddly enough, for a guy that missed the first 2 months, health. I mean, I think he's young, you know, he's younger. It isn't a chronic thing with him, although certainly that forearm and elbow could crop up at any time.
So you believe that he's healthy then? See, I still think the Tommy John thing was real. And what we're seeing now, to me, I'm surprised by.
Well, it could go at any time. I mean, you know, you get up into 31, 32 and you have some forearm elbow issues, then obviously it can, you can have that ligament completely give way and you're gone for the next 12 to 14 months. But based on what I've seen the last couple, I think he can be a very good number two guy.
See, I also pick Price. And the elbow scares the crap out of me still. I mean, I need to see more than 2 good starts in a row. It's the first time he's made 2 good starts in a row. He's only made 7, but even so, like a guy like him should be able to give you 2 good ones in a row. He's had enough time now to sort of get up to speed. And so I want to see more than 2 good starts in a row before I fully believe in the health of that elbow. But I do believe that he is more likely to contribute than Hanley because for all of the criticisms we have had of Price, you know, he's too sensitive. He's temperamental. He's on Twitter too much. He's got rabbit ears. He's listening to everything. All of that. He puts too much pressure on himself. All of that. I've never once said the guy was unprofessional. Ever. I've never said that he lacked work ethic. Or with Hanley, I wonder about those things. With Hanley, to me, it's a, you know, it's a mental and...
Yeah, sometimes you got to coax it out of him.
Okay, with Hanley, it's a question of his head and his heart.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if he cares. With Price, you wonder if he cares too much. So which is why I think if Price is healthy, I think there's a chance Price could give you something. Hanley, I don't know. I mean, Hanley's just too hard to predict. Again, 617-779-0985. Mike is in Watertown. Go, Mike.
Oh, hey, Tony, Sean, Marshall. Hope you have a nice fourth.
You too, Mike. What do you got?
Thank you.
So I have a really bad feeling, kind of piggybacking on the last caller, that Dombrowski's going to make another horrible trade, whether it's our farm system for a guy like Moustakas. I think rental players fail 90% of the time. Last year, you got Beltran to the Rangers. You know, they fleeced them in that trade. Andrew Miller worked out, or all the Shaman worked out, but you can go on and on down the years. CeCe Sabathia, Johnny Cueto to the Royals. I think it's a bad move.
Okay, so Sean, do you think the Red Sox are going to do something substantive at the deadline?
Yes, I do. But I'm with Mike. I would not be pursuing Moustakas, even though he solves an obvious area of need at third base where you're not getting any offensive production at all. A couple of things would scare me off. As he said, rentals are tricky, and I think that's the one thing is that I don't think that the Royals can demand too much for a guy that's going to walk in a couple of months. Secondly, I'd be a little wary of a guy who's having a career year in his walk year and a career power year. He's got 19, 20 home runs now. He's easily going to set a career high for home runs. And he's on record as saying he wants to stay in Kansas City. So what does that do to a guy who gets airlifted into a market like Boston, even if it's only for 2 months on July 31st? I think there's a lot that can go wrong there. And my fear, if I were a Red Sox fan, would be that you're going to overpay for someone who's going to underproduce and not adapt to this place.
I would still go bullpen, Sean, first. I would. I'd go bullpen first. You know, you're going to be without Tyler Thornburg. Who knows what Carson Smith is going to give you? And I don't believe fully in the guys they have there, whether it's Kelly or Barnes or Robbie Scott. I mean, to me, I want another arm there. Now, look, this relates in some way to the roster decisions they have in front of them. Doug Fister's pitching tonight. Eduardo Rodriguez made a rehab outing last night.
And got lit up.
So the Red Sox haven't said anything yet about what they're going to do with Rodriguez. It could be that they are waiting to see how Fister pitches before they decide whether they're going to send Rodriguez back for another one. I mean, they get some wiggle room there. But even if Rodriguez does come back, my guess is Fister ends up in the bullpen. I don't think they're just going to let him go.
Yeah, but Fister's more of a guy that's stretched out a little bit. He's not
sure.
The eighth inning answer.
No, he's a
ground ball guy. He's not a power guy.
Okay, but I'll take every arm I can get.
Yeah, right. I mean, if he's better than some guys you have out there, but he's not your bridge guy to get you to Kimbrel.
I will take every arm I can get. I don't want them making a big deal, and it wouldn't surprise me if they try to piece it like they're piecing it now. The bullpen's different. But they picked up Doug Fister. They're taking a flyer on Johnny Peralta. To me, these are the kinds of moves you're going to get. See, I think they're serious about that luxury tax threshold, Sean. Jim is in the car. Jim, what do you got?
Tony, you know I love you, man, but seriously.
Jim, you don't have to issue a disclaimer. If you think I'm an idiot because I'm wrong about everything, go ahead. Just say it.
No, but since you said that, I am going to point out the critic in you. First of all, you started the season with the bang saying you didn't like Kimbrel. You know, you didn't like his style. You didn't feel comfortable, even though he was like 33 out of 35 last year. This year, Pomeran, about 2 weeks ago, you called him a dog. Since then, he's had three or four solid starts.
I think I called him a bum, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I'm positive you called him a dog because I reached for my nitro. And then the last one was, I don't know, 10 days ago, Bogaerts is hitting .320. You, in your words, said he's above average fielder. You said, I'd like to have more power. Are you kidding me? But the good news is, every time you criticize somebody, they go off. So he hit a couple of home runs. Yesterday, you kicked the crap out of Ramirez. He hit a home run last night. So I want you to keep criticizing, but put down the Tangway tonic. This team has not been healthy yet. Give us a starting rotation for, like, you know, six, 8 weeks, and watch what the team does.
Okay, so Jim, then we're both happy because I get to criticize and they get to turn it around. So you're happy too. Do you really think Craig Kimbrel is throwing the ball the same now as he did last year? Like the save numbers for Kimbrel last year, please throw them out the window. What I said was Kimbrel to me, I hate the way he pitches. It feels to me like he's just whipping it. And you know what happened? He started getting his delivery a little more under control and he started throwing in the strike zone more. This is the guy I thought they were getting,
Sean. Well, this is the guy you saw in 2012 who had one of the best seasons in modern baseball history for a closer.
Okay.
These kind of unhittable, 100 batting average against, 400 OPS against, ERA well under 2. This is what he's capable of, and I think it's pretty clear that whether it was the knee last year, which impacted his delivery, something, the command is much, much better. He's got Eck-like numbers now with, you know, 60-something strikeouts and five walks.
I mean, and so I'm not going to criticize him when he pitches like this. I never said get rid of Kimbrel. I just said he's not pitching to his capability, and he wasn't. And Bogarts can give you more power. Pomeranz, I'll believe it when I see it consistently for something more than a few starts, because it feels to me like with him, you get three good ones, three bad ones, three good ones, three bad ones. That's what you get with him. So again, you want to buy in now on Pomeranz? Fine. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I am. With Hanley, good luck on that one. Let me know how that one goes. Okay, Matt's in Fall River. Go.
Hey, guys. First of all, I just want to say every time I see Travis Shaw hit a home run, I want to pull my damn hair out. I have 2 points I want to make. First is Rick Porcello. You guys had a caller call in a couple of days ago, I think the Felger and Mash show, where they were saying that Porcello might be injured. I don't think that's the case. I think it's an issue with his mechanics. It's either his release point's off or his arm slot is off because, you know, he's missing with his fastballs over the plate and he's missing with his off-speed stuff up in the zone. And it's not like the Porcello from a couple years ago pitching to contact. It's more than pitching to contact. He's just getting shelled because he's missing his spots and he's missing bad. The second thing I wanted to talk about was, I don't know if you guys have seen this this prospect the Sox just picked up in the international free agent draft, but he's a 16-year-old kid, I think, from Venezuela. He's a catcher, and he looks unbelievable. He can break the ball, and he's got an absolute laser arm. I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table.
They can't officially announce that, Rick, until Sunday. That's the first day of international signings. But he is a highly regarded switch-hitting catcher who is athletic with good power. We've heard that before with Blake Swihart.
He's only 16, though?
Well, as all these guys are at the international signing
stage.
Okay,
so he's got a ways to go.
Yeah, obviously. But he is... his first name is Danny, and I don't remember the last name, but... most talent evaluators think that he is a blue chip prospect and one of the most sought after players on the international market. But
speaking of, I'm happy to hear it. I mean, you can never have enough prospects, and if they're international, fine, that's good too. The Red Sox should use that advantage. Rafael Devers is playing in the Futures game during the All-Star game. He's the Red Sox lone representative from their minor league system. You know who else is in the Futures game, Marshall?
Do tell.
Yoán Moncada.
Oh, that guy's good.
Michael Kopech.
Heard of him.
Mauricio Dubon.
Okay.
And you know what they all have in common, those last three?
Traded by Dave Dombrowski.
The Red Sox traded them
all.
And
you didn't like those trades, right?
No, I like the sale deal.
Okay. I'm just going to ask you this because the texter has a question I think should be directed at you.
Well, go fast.
I am very fast. Do the Sox miss Buchholz with Price and Erod injuries?
No. No. Someone being a wise ass because they said but the point is they had to pick up Doug Fister for depth.
Yeah,
right?
Buchholz is out for the season.
They had to pick up Doug Fister for depth. I just didn't like them trading away the pitching depth.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub. Radio.com.